future. However, I was looking for a great tie-in with what's happening, and it came to me in the form of a question. And that question is this, gentlemen. Can you dig it? Yes, gentlemen. Yes. For all of my old heads, you will know this movie. You will know that question. That question came from the leader of the Gramercy Riffs named Cyrus. And the movie was called The Warriors. Now, when you look at Cyrus's ultimate plan of union between the gangs, what does the takeover in Chicago represent? A union amongst the youth. Yeah. But there's one key thing that Cyrus said in his speech that the media continues to talk about in regards to these quote unquote street takeovers. Now, I'm going to read some of the actual speech, and I'm going to do some comparing and contrasting along the way to tie it all together.
What is going on, men? It's your boy, Crimson. I fucking love Red Pill Married. I think I've been following him since 2 years now. 2 to 3 years now. And, damn, dude. He's always touching. I remember I used to fucking film videos after watching his content because it was just inspirational. But now it seems everybody's fucking 3 steps behind me. Like I said, man, I wasn't the only one thinking about this shit. Yet another one. Another fucking man is out here telling you you need to find a better purpose with your pain. Do something more productive with it and unify. I'm telling you. You see, there's 3 avenues I'm going to touch on. One of them was going back to what my dad taught me. And I didn't realize this until just recently. You see, my dad was a brown belt martial artist. He was like a 5-time gold medal martial artist. He did boxing, he did kung fu, and he did something else. I think kickboxing. And when he was younger, according to not just my uncles on my dad's side, but my uncles on my mom's side, he was going to go to the Olympics, but decided to get high, get drunk, just throw away his fucking career. And it's sad because every time you look at his Facebook pictures, it's always like pictures, dude, it's like pictures of him in the past. How many women do you see that? Like, they've got pictures of them in their 20s and shit. And then when you see them, like, live or in person or in real life, it's just like, dude, you look nothing like your picture. Like, how many filters did you use? Oh, no, I didn't use any filters. That was my picture when I was, like, in my 20s. And, like, what the fuck? That's what I mean. He's one of those. Won't let go of high school days. So, what my dad taught me, because I always wanted to learn martial arts. I always begged him to teach me, and he never wanted to teach me. He was one of those types of people where, just like what Tom Likas said, he never wants to be outshined. Your parents never want you to progress more than they did. They're always going to hold you back. That's why you need to leave and go do your own thing. So, the gift that my dad gave me that I never realized until later in life is just because you asked, no matter how insignificant you might think it is, no matter how simple it might be, the answer might be no. You might not get what you want. And to me, I had always learned this lesson I never expected anything from anybody, but I never knew where I got that from. You see, all that disappointment that I got from my dad, all those broken promises, it hardened me. And it made me find my own avenue in life to get the things that I wanted. So I studied Muay Thai. I studied boxing. I studied, you know, kickboxing, which is American kickboxing is a collaboration between, you know, American boxing and Ryukyushu karate, which is full contact karate. And, well, you know, Brazilian jiu-jitsu and boxing. I'm not a badass. I'm not. I'm not anywhere near any kind of any fucking belt ranking, but trust me when I say this, I can at least take care of myself. I can hold my own against two, which is hard as fuck. It's not easy. It's not as easy as I make it sound, but I can at least hold them the fuck off. Now, here's where it gets fucking funky, right? It's like, if you were to ask God something insignificant, right? For the most part, he answers your prayers. But if you were to ask God, hey God, can you teach me how to make dirt? No matter how insignificant you might think that is, something meaningless, something that doesn't really require much, the answer may just be no. Now, you'll never know why. Who knows? Maybe it might be to save you from yourself, from creating something that you can't fucking stop. It might be because it might be too good for your own good. It might be to stop you from being egotistical. It might be because the path may be just too easy. It wouldn't matter why. The answer is always going to be what it is. And you got to prepare for that. So, with that being said, getting back to where we left off it's not going to happen. But we can certainly pave the way to at least guide it in that direction, more or less. If there's anything that I learned from fucking my exes coming back is things never go back to the way they were. There's bigger trust issues there now because of that time gap. They always think that they can leave and come back. I think I've only really done that with two girls in my life. One of them repeated. And I learned my lesson the hard way. Now, the other avenue that I wanted to visit is the David Goggins cookie jar metaphor. You see, David Goggins is this incredible individual. I would recommend you look him up. What he recommended was anytime you achieve something, you get a cookie jar. And you take a piece of paper and you write down your achievements on that piece of paper. And you fold it up and you put it in that cookie jar. So that whenever you need any inspiration, you can reach into that cookie jar of achievements you've done and pull out something that'll help inspire you to push forward when you have no gas left, when you've got no determination to pull anymore, when you're completely tapped out and you think you've got no fucking energy left for this shit. All those suicidal thoughts that you have, all that pain that you have, you can reach inside your own cookie jar and remember what the fuck you went through. And it's difficult, man. It's not easy to build that, especially when you don't value what you do in life, like I did. I didn't value a single thing I did in life until I heard it from a friend of mine. He said, Jackie boy, you never ever stop fighting. No matter how many times you hit homelessness, no matter how many times Your family betrays you. Your ex-girlfriend betrays you. Your best friends betray you. Your drinking club betrays you. The club that you start betrays you. You still get back up. And I've never seen anybody fight that hard in my life. And to me, I mean, when you pick up, when you're told you got to leave this school and go to another school in a week, when you do that 30 some odd times in your life, and you go to 28 different homes, or excuse me, 28 different schools and 53 different homes, you just learn to fucking deal with it. Stability to me is finite. It's as finite as a dandelion. It's never certain. The bloom is certain. But how long that dandelion can hold without being fucked with and without disintegrating, that's never certain. But you know that it's going to fall apart, and you know it's going to bloom. So that's always been my mindset. At any given time, some bullshit can happen, and you're going to have to figure out a way how to fight your way out. And that's when you got to dip into a fortune cookie and look at the achievements you've done in the past. Now, here's the other thing. The other avenue. Actually, there's two more. Understanding why you made the choice that you did to pick the person that you did. And coming to terms that you made the wrong choice. That is the hardest one to accept. A lot of people, I fucking see it all the time, man. This narcissist made me fall in love with somebody that they weren't. This narcissist tricked me. They wore a mask and they duped me. As a matter of fact, I made a video about that. This cute little goth girl. She fucking fell in love with the narcissistic piece of shit and she stayed with them. Why did she stay with them? Because she fucking convinced herself that, some bullshit fairy tale of like, oh, that was, I wished upon a shooting star that he was going to be the one. And that's why I never gave up hope. Yeah, that's the one thing that women are really good at, by the way, is convincing themselves and giving themselves false hope. They do it to them fucking selves. But here's the thing. For myself, for me personally, I learned that from my mom. I learned not to give up because of my mom. I learned not to just throw in the cards because of my mom. And the day that she turned her back on me and gave her love, instead of to me, her own son, decided to give it to somebody else, that is when I went to go seek love from other girls. And that was when my fucking downfall started. Age 14, I'll never forget it. Excuse me, I was 12 turning, no, I was 13 years old turning 14. So, there it is. Well, it killed me, because I was chasing fucking validation and love and attention from somebody, or from women who I never knew weren't gonna stay. I never thought that they would leave. I thought that if I'm just a good enough person, they'll stay. And then when you look at the people that they shack up with and they stayed with, and you know, mechanics who have fucking baby mamas all over the place. As a matter of fact, I think I told you guys, there was this girl that I was fucking chasing. And, she was with this fucking deadbeat loser who's always fucking negative. And I tried to convince her to fucking come over. She wouldn't. She stayed loyal to that guy. Until this day, the guy's a fucking deadbeat. We met, the guy and I. And he towers over me by about, I think, 5 or 6 inches. Couldn't look at me in the eye. And I fucking hit on his girl right in front of him. Not a flinch. I'm telling you, man. Those fucking guys are cowards. They let their egos drive them and tell, repeat the message in their head that they're a Billy Badass. But I never once see them step up when somebody fucking tries to charm their chick. Never once. So, here's the other bit. The toughest battle that you went through as a man with your breakup or your divorce in life, I have only simulated. Let me repeat that. The toughest breakup or divorce that you went through, I have only simulated. Now, let me give you a little bit of detail on that. You see, the woman that I was involved with was a single mom of three kids. Three kids that weren't mine. Now, I lived with my family at the time. And my family, they were estranged. In other words, my dad kept me away from them. And it only made sense because they were complete pieces of shit. But I didn't know that as a kid. I just missed them. I miss hanging out with them. Every weekend, my grandmother would make a big-ass fucking feast, breakfast, lunch, and dinner when we would go visit. And then we would go on our way. We'd go home. Me and my cousins. And I think I only did that like 6 times. 6 times out of 25 years. And when I went to see them, they looked at me like I was a fucking stranger. They had no idea who the... they didn't know how to fucking treat me. No love, no nothing. Just a simple hi. How are you? How have you been? And I'm like, I'm doing great. And as soon as I would try to get into like a loving family kind of vibe, they would back the fuck away. They would shut that conversation right the fuck down. And that would kill me. So, between trying to win the love and affection from my family, I was dating a woman who I was also trying to win her love and affection while she was caught up with her ex-husband. And of course, she broke up with me, fucking disappeared for 3 weeks, and you already know where she went. And then she came back. And then she disappeared. And then she came back. And she kept telling me, I kept thinking about you. She kept telling me how she fucked up, and she wishes she could undo everything that we did in the past. While simultaneously saying, I love you, and I want us to get back together and fix things. That hot cold bullshit all in one sentence, which means she's not really into me, but she doesn't want to be alone either, so I'm her best option. And I fell in love with her kids, who also had a huge attachment to me, but they could tell that I wasn't going to sit for very long. They knew, because they knew their mother more than I knew her. They're her fucking kids. So when she broke up with me, it fucking tore me apart. Not right away. For I think like the first six months, I think I was emotionally distant. I was just drifting through life. I didn't feel anything. I was recovering. My brain was constantly foggy. My emotions were all over the place. I couldn't figure anything out. Memory was very tough. I couldn't focus. I would get easily lost in terms of geographic. I would forget where the fuck I was headed. And then I started drinking even heavier. I mean, no, I stopped drinking, but then the symptoms got worse. So I started drinking again. Because I noticed that not only would I get a nice buzz, but I would start to think philosophically and I wouldn't have to feel the pain. And then, when that didn't work, I went back to falling apart. I remember I opened up a dresser, and her clothes were in there. that I had completely forgotten. It was like a full three sets of wardrobe. Her underwear, her socks, her jeans, and her shirts, and a couple sweaters. That was like her spend the night clothes that I had prepared for her. And I never sobbed so hard in my life. I remember taking her sweater and smelling it and just smelling her. And the pain was so immense. I fucking bawled my eyes out for hours. And I thought I would rather be in pain, or I would rather struggle with her again than to be alone without her. And right when that thought hit me, I snapped out of it and woke up. I took her clothes and I buried it in some park somewhere, because I didn't have the heart to fucking throw them away. I thought it would be symbolic. Fast forward, I gave my love and attention to people that I thought would be my brothers for life. And at the time, I was just getting back into Christ. But if I would have known that in the Bible it said never trust man because they're always going to disappoint you, I never would have fucking joined them. I never would have given them that time and attention. The time and attention that I wanted to give to my ex, I ended up giving them. The honor, the honesty, the commitment. The club to me was like a second wife. It was like a second chance at life. Now, don't get me wrong. It taught me a lot. It taught me a hell of a lot in life. But trust isn't something that I give anymore. It's got to be earned. Same thing with respect and my friendship. You've got to really go out of your way for me to just consider you a friend right out of the gate. That's got to be something completely spectacular and unordinary. So, with all that being said, the breakup was more like of a simulation. Because it was divorce, the loss of children that weren't mine, and I got to experience firsthand what that fucking pain felt like. And it's devastating. You feel like you're dying every fucking day. Your sense of purpose doesn't exist, and it multiplies every fucking day. And I went from hot and cold, hot and cold. One day I would love her, the next day I would hate her. One minute I would fucking absolutely obsess over her, and then the next I would fucking completely despise every fucking bit of her being. And I would go into that psychological abuse over and over and over again. As Pop would say, you're caught in a limbo. And the only thing that broke that limbo was when I got my life together and I got back together with her. And I documented in my head every moment that we were together. And I took note of her character. It flips within a fucking fraction of a second. We could be at a red light, laughing, and then she'll just look at something and then just get completely depressed. And I would think, oh my God, she's fucking bipolar. And then I would look at her and say, hey, what just happened? She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you just fucking went quiet on me. You're depressed. She's like, no, I'm not. And she would just like try to play it off. I'm like, yeah, you are. Why are you sad? We're together again. She's like, I don't know how long this is going to last. And I remember reassuring her, like, this can last forever if we work at it. It's not going to be easy. And of course, she played her bullshit games all over again, and I just like, you know what? I'm gonna put you through a fucking emotional Army Ranger training. Let's see what you got. She couldn't even last a fucking day, 2 days. It was too fucking hard for her. I remember telling her, dude, if you want to fucking earn my, like, if you want my last name, you're going to have to earn it. If you want a fucking relationship with me, you're going to have to really fucking fight for that. Because that's going to be a privilege. A privilege that's going to be easily fucking taken away. Because I don't want you to fucking ever forget how hard it was to get it. Because the moment that I give it to you, you're going to throw it the fuck away like you've done everything in life. It wasn't until I thought if I did all these exercises that it would relieve the pain, but it didn't. But do you know what did? Accepting that I made the wrong choice. Accepting that I fucked up. Accepting that I made the choice to pick the wrong person to be with. And through that, I was able to create acceptance and then forgiveness. I was able to forgive myself for making a stupid move. Don't get me wrong, man. My dick still's got control over me. I see a girl and the first thing my fucking instinct is just go over there and talk to her, and I gotta fucking clench my heart and remember why the fuck I don't do that anymore. I remember now. Every time I see a girl, I think, no, look at the way she's dressed. If she's bending over like that with the skirt, knowing that her fucking, that the bottom of her ass cheeks are hanging out, she's facing traffic, what kind of girl is she going to be when I tell her, hey, I don't want you dressing like that without me? She's going to fucking laugh in my face. So what I went through was emulated. But what you went through was real. And that struggle that you went through, never forget how you made it out of there. That you made it through that. Rather, you're still healing, or you're still, you've already passed all the fighting. But to go back to what Red Pill Mary said, you need to do something else with that pain. You need to find a purpose and get back into the fight. Whatever you did not, whatever you gave to that family that's no longer there, give to your community. Fight for your culture back. Fuck everyone, dude. Wouldn't it be interesting if every fucking MGTOW man got together and went to the fucking court system and told them to go fuck themselves? If we just all gathered together and just closed that motherfucker down? All those family courts just said, no, we're not going to allow you guys to fucking to go in here and operate anymore. Fuck off. We're not going to allow you to destroy another man's life. We're not going to allow you to fuck shit up. We're not going to capitulate to this bullshit anymore. Because think about it this way. We're already winning the dating game. Girls are out there getting fucking played left and right. How many fucking TikTok videos do you see of these bitches bitching and crying that they can't find a good man? Nobody wants to approach him anymore. Nobody wants to date him. Nobody wants to be serious anymore. Nobody wants to fucking sit down and what is it? Build with them. In other words, how can I fucking extract as much money from you? You already know. I don't need to tell you. You're smart as fuck. You already know the language. You already know the fucking game. And if you don't, you're gonna learn it pretty fucking fast. Because they women have a great way of talking while not telling you what the obvious is. They never want to talk about the thing that's bothering them. They'll beat around the bush. They want you to already know what is the unknown, what is the unspoken. It's like Chris Voss said. It's those 90 out of a 2-hour conversation, you're gonna get 90 seconds of gold. She's gonna tell you everything that she needs and she wants within those first 90 seconds of talk, or excuse me, within the first 2 hours of talking to her. And those 90 seconds are going to be gold. And there's exercises to go do that. It's not hard. Silence is a really good way of extracting information, because they'll rephrase whatever they were saying to try and assure you. And always remember that they're trying to get assurance from you. They know that they're fucking up, and to you, they're like a confession booth. So they're going to try to reiterate, reframe, and try to say things to make what they're saying, or what their lifestyle is, justified by you. Now here's the other bit. If you have empathy for what they're, for like a, like it's like a, if you have empathy for them, trust me when I say this, that's a fucking weapon. Because you'll see where they're coming from. You already know what their disadvantage is. They're a single mom who has nobody to fucking help them pay half the fucking bills. So you already know where half of their angle's coming from. The other half might be stability and